Hello.
Hello.
Hello, USA. It is your girls,
Kat
and Julie,
with another episode.
Whoop, whoop, whoop. Yeah, you know, short and sweet little intro. It's fine.
A little calm down after last week, where I was literally losing my mind.
I think we both were. Like, just listening to us, I was so entertained.
Who was I?
Oh my gosh. I'm really feeling some type of way.
I couldn't even speak. Like, I know I already struggle with the English language, but that was a whole...
Jinjum?
Jinjum. Yes.
Jinjum.
Yeah, I also have a cat named Jenny, so I have that inclination to say it like Jenny.
Yeah.
So in my exhausted brain, it made sense.
We forgive you.
Thank you.
We forgive you.
I really appreciate that, and I'm so happy that we can move forward in this moment.
Yes. Yes.
YouTuber apology.
Back to the YouTuber apology. Oh.
There we go. Julie's on the train now.
Apology. Oh, okay.
So, if you haven't already done so, in an attempt to save my soul, please follow us on Instagram. Save my soul and my dignity by one like or follow. At MS.
After last week's performance, she needs all the help she can get.
People. I need all the help I can get. So, part of the store has been playing Christmas music, but it's not throughout the whole store yet.
Mm-hmm.
So. Give me that boost of serotonin, because once that music starts, it's going to be nonstop.
It's over.
And my brain is not going to be able to handle it. I'm going to be reliving last week's episode.
While I'm trying to say the name. What was it?
It was a flower.
Flesh.
Flower pusher?
Flower. Flesh.
Flower
flubber?
Push. No, it was flesh. It was something with, it was like flower pusher. I guess that's just how you...
Oh, because he was a jailbird, huh? He had had a stink
in
jail.
Yeah, so you know how you gotta push flour and do the stuff you gotta
do to live. I think the only reason I know that is because it's in a Lil Wayne song.
Oh my god.
He says, because I'd rather be pushing flowers. So, and then there's the next part, but I don't...
Something very insightful into our criminal justice system.
Yes, Lil Wayne, our savior, our
Old
lord.
Dude. Didn't he like say some like pro-Trump shit?
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay, well, we're not going to talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it.
And I'm taking...
You've been drinking too much lean.
I'm taking my policing class now. And I've actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was going to be a little heated. But it's very interesting because a lot of it is just like examining the culture of the police, and like the chapter I was reading before we started this call is talking about like the themes of like, I don't know. It's just very, I don't know what I'm saying, but it's talking a lot about police culture. And my professor, she's like traveled the world doing research. Like she did research in Israel. I think she did research in the U.S. She did research here in Charlotte and then also in New York on policing. And basically the theme through all of the posts are it's interesting to learn the culture and how the police came to be. But there's still that side of corruption that people don't want to overlook. Well, you can't overlook it because it affects people every day.
Yeah. Like, I mean, even for our sake, when, you know, you hear about some of these murders that happened in, like, California in the 70s or around that time period, you're just like, yeah, nobody ever really knows what actually happened because the police was so corrupt and they were probably covering for someone, like not only themselves but whoever they were aligned with. So
yeah, and part of that's like they're the brotherhood of silence because you're so loyal to each other that, I mean, that's just like one snippet of it. I don't know. I've been paying more attention to the correction side of it because I find those prompts way more interesting. Like, I have to write about how prison culture affects rehabilitation of prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Fun fact. It doesn't help.
It
does not.
No.
It's more punishment than rehabilitation.
Especially when you don't have the resources to implement rehabilitation programs.
Exactly what I'm going to write about. Because one, your basic needs aren't being met. So while you're in there, you're not going to be thinking about the crime you committed. You're going to be thinking about how you're going to survive your day-to-day, what you need to trade to get your basic essentials. Like, you know, that's why they like bargain with soap and chips, like they like Dorito chips. Like, that's how they they
for
live.
Sure. Yeah, that shit's insane. The prison system. Love it, love it.
Love it.
So yeah, we hope you guys enjoyed our episode last week.
Woo!
If we lost some of you, you know what?
You know what? If you toughed it out for us and saw us at our lowest,
you a real one.
You are a real Miss Murder friend. You're a real pal.
And perhaps you may have noticed that every week when we record these, we are at our lowest. Because we just live like that. We just live like that.
It's the highlight of my week.
Same. Like, oh, honestly, me too.
I get to research crime. Yay! And then I'm like, wait, but I'm too tired from my job or from school to research crime. And I'm like, no. And I'm like, but I also want to talk about. Well, I don't want to give away who I'm doing next week or our next episode. No, I'm not going to give that away. I don't even think you've heard of this dude, so.
Probably not.
Fun fact, it's a Charlotte case.
Oh, close to home.
Close to home.
Well, that's funny you mentioned that. I was gonna do, not this week, but probably for my next episode, I was looking to do like a local crime. Mm-hmm. So that's funny that you are doing a local crime.
Because, I'm doing a local crime.
Our friend from college, Snail.
Oh yeah. Snail,
he sent me a DM on Instagram talking about the Crime Door app.
Oh, what's
and
that?
So it's really cool. So like there's like different sections, but like I guess the main function of it is where you have like an immersive 3D look into like infamous crime scenes. So
what
you have, so like the free version, the only one that it comes unlocked with is the OJ Simpson
my god
crime scene.
What?
And then you can unlock like JonBenet Ramsey and some of other infamous shit. Yeah, it's really cool. And then one section of it, you can plug in your location and then it'll tell you like what cases are around you.
Oh,
so super cool. You guys should go check it out. You should check it out. It's dope AF. If you're listening, sponsor us. No, but seriously, very cool. I got like, and you can search the entire world for crimes.
Oh my gosh, that's
so
cool.
I got, you know, not to spoil, but I've got a cool little like Australian case coming up in my lineup there.
Because, I mean, you hear about these crime scenes all the time and you see some photos. So I guess they just recreate the photos.
Yeah, like, they
like Google Maps 3D, crime.
They 3D render them. Yeah. It's
really cool.
Yeah.
That would be so cool to see the OJ case. Because I remember talking about that in my law of evidence class.
Yeah.
And how, you know, like certain pieces of evidence they couldn't let in because it was repetitive. And I think one of the if I'm remembering it right, one of the things about the defense is that they said, I don't even know if this is accurate, but blood or the amount of blood on the scene, they tried to say was prejudicial. Like, the crime scene was so bloody that having those photos admitted and shown to a jury would be prejudicial towards OJ.
But that's kind of the point of the it's there,
and
it's in front of
like,
you.
I literally remember sitting in class and we're talking about this and then my mind just goes blank after the analysis is given, but I distinctly remember that.
So yes, I guess some other little updates. We will not have an episode next week because my dad is getting married.
Yay!
So, you know, we're having a little small get together just at one of his friend's house. So we're going to try our best to be socially distant and
staying safe.
Staying safe. So yeah, that's where I'll be all next weekend. So I will not be able to record and we will not get to hear Kat's fabulous case.
Which is fine, because I have not even finished my research.
It is what it is, honestly. And I guess right before we jump in, like we usually do, I think this is going to be our first two-part episode.
Oh my god, a two-parter? What?
Because let me tell you, when I started researching this and was like reading about this person's background, like their background information alone, there was so much to fucking unpack.
Oh, that's a good sign, though, for this show.
Yeah,
that is a very good sign.
Oh, absolutely. So this week I will be covering our background information leading up to the first murder and the first murder, and then the next week we will continue with the remainder of the murders and then the capture and all of that fun stuff.
Hey.
And I guess I haven't even, yes, and I haven't even told you who we're talking about, so.
And who are we talking about?
This week, Catherine, let me tell you, we Please. Are talking about the one, the only.
Bow, bow, bow.
Robert Berdella, the Butcher of Kansas City.
Ooh.
AKA the collector, not the Ooh. Bone collector. Don't get it twisted.
We're not going to separate. No, two different states, two different killers. Two different.
Yes.
He's not just he doesn't collect bones, but he collects
victims is what he collects. Honestly.
Yes.
This dude is fucked up.
He's got a long resume of it.
Yes.
Probably.
He does. Do you know this case, Catherine?
I feel like the one case that I'm thinking of, it's actually a movie on Netflix, and it's about a family that owns a general store, like in, oh God, like late 1800s, early 1900s, middle of nowhere, Midwest, and they were an actual family that committed mass murder of people attending their grocery store, because they'd be like, oh, have some dinner, spend the night.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know, they get them eating, they get them drinking, and then Paw comes up behind him with an axe and just boop on the
head. No, that sounds insane, but that is not the insanity we're talking about tonight.
Is this gonna be even more insane?
Yeah.
Oh, so that was a confident it's gonna be real bad.
I mean, I feel like once it becomes a family affair of murder, that's another level.
That's a whole other bubble.
So maybe it's not quite there, because this is just one sicko. It's not a whole family of sickos.
Take a shot, because I feel something.
Yes.
With his extensive list of killing, that's probably going to outweigh a family.
Which, like, believe it or not, this guy only killed 6 people. But each of the murders was just so gruesome, and they just like increased, like every murder,
it just escalated,
got a little bit more and more intense as he was learning about like what he liked. I don't know what he liked, I guess, but the shit's
insane. I
don't
even know.
So we're going to talk a little bit about that today.
Yes.
So Robert Berdella, he is who we now know as the Kansas City Butcher or the Collector. He kidnapped, raped, tortured, and killed at least 6 men between 1984 and 1987 in Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So you can see why he was called the Butcher, because
oh,
Yes. He be killing. So we definitely only know of six, but you know, there could be more. So Robert Andrew Berdella Jr. was born January 31st, 1948 in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Cuyahoga.
It's in Ohio.
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Only of the coasts. Everything in the middle is just mishmash.
Yeah. Yeah, you know. It's just a hodgepodge.
Oh my God. My Andy, my boyfriend, for those of you who do not know, he graduated from college with a geography degree, and he's a nerd, to put it mildly. He sometimes will spend like his Saturdays just playing quizzes, like geography quizzes on the internet. And one time he tried to get me to play one. So you got the map, the outline of the United States without the state borders.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you tried
I've done
to
that.
Click on the area where you thought each state was.
Yeah.
I did not do well.
I feel like there was a class that made me do that. I did okay, I think. Just because I know the East Coast and the West Coast, and then I just kind of fumbled the middle.
Yeah. You are a smarter woman than me, because I swear I didn't even get half of it right.
This is why I'm better with directions.
Yeah. Again, once again, when Kat and I go traveling together, I will be put on a leash.
Yes.
So that I do not get lost.
I'm not going to lose my child.
Yes. I am.
Like, I was thinking
about
it.
Catherine's baby and her sister. So you do the math because I'm not.
It's a southern thing. Just ignore it.
It's a southern thing.
But you know, the last trip we actually took together was our eighth grade field trip to DC.
Yes.
That was the last time we took an actual trip together.
You know, that trip was a shit show.
It was.
There, so much happened. One day, one of the days we were all supposed to wake up early and be on the bus by a certain time, and a guy had really bad diarrhea the night before.
I remember this.
And had fallen asleep on the toilet.
Nobody
had woken him up, so they had to go back to check to make sure he was okay, and he was just asleep on the toilet.
Like, there was a lot.
Charlotte
I almost
Mecklenburg.
Got left behind in the Holocaust Museum.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was the
it's
very...
It's that's the best museum.
I was just, like,
there's
taking
so much
it all in. Because it's, yeah, because
yes.
it's something that
you
I
cannot
spent.
Rush it.
Exactly. Like, I remember standing in the room where they have, like, the pile of shoes, and I was just, like, absorbing
Literally.
Everything. I was the very last person
yeah.
out, and they were wondering where I was because we couldn't go to the next spot without me. And then I was like, wait, I don't see anybody from my class. Maybe they left. Because I could spend hours in a museum. That's what I love. The one thing that COVID has taken from me is museums. But that's a pretty okay problem to have. Like,
yeah, for sure.
And that's not a problem
in the grand scheme. In the grand scheme.
In the yeah,
you know,
no, that my little opinion. No, like
we could be teachers,
we could,
like my sister who is so shout out to Raffi,
shout out to Raffi
because she listens loyally every week and gets mad that I've shouted out multiple people, but
that
haven't
you
shouted her out.
On multiple people,
I shout
except
off
your
people,
sister.
Yeah, yeah, I shit on her every day. JK, no, she's love her, love you, Raph.
Love
shouting
your support.
You out, see, so don't get your panties in a twist. But yes, we took a big digression there.
We really did.
That's okay.
We just said, hey, anyway. This guy was born anyway. Let's talk about the Holocaust.
Also, let's talk about our eighth grade field trip. I love that.
Man.
It's just you know
just,
our minds.
It
our
is.
Minds.
It's a powerful and terrifying thing.
About it. Yeah, so back to Mr. Robert Berdella.
We know he was born.
We know he was born, right?
He exists.
So he came out of the womb like every one of us. He was the oldest son of two, and his parents were Robert Burdella Sr. and Mary Burdella. So Robert Burdella Sr. was of Italian descent, and he was deeply, deeply Catholic.
Shout out to your Italian heritage.
I promise you, I do not mean to keep doing these, but
that's just how it's been going. We're going to roll.
Don't worry. In a few weeks, or maybe not, because I already have my next few weeks planned, but soon I'll do Lorena Bobbitt, the Ecuadorian woman who chopped her husband's penis off. So that'll be the other side. My Ecuadorian heritage will see the light of day.
We're balancing it out.
I love that. You know how deep them Italians be in the Catholic Church. So, hello. You know, that family was like, they went to mass. The kids took like extra lessons.
The Sunday school extras. Were they probably altar boys?
Yeah, probably.
Probably.
So as a kid, Robert was described as intelligent, but he was also a loner who rarely played outside of his home. And he seldom had friends to visit to socialize with because he was unathletic. He had a speech impediment. He wore thick-ass glasses from the time that he was five.
And we know how those glasses look.
Yeah. And to top things off, he also was diagnosed with high blood pressure at a very young age, so he always had to be on medication. He just had, from the jump, the Catholic guilt eating away
at his soul every day, and Jesus was just like, we got to make his blood pressure high. That's how we're going to account.
It's the Catholic guilt. It's the toxic masculinity from the Catholic father. It's a culmination of things. So clearly he was not very popular at school. He was not very popular, like, even with his teachers, because even though he was very smart, he was also like very disinterested in learning.
He was one of those.
On the other hand, though, Robert's younger brother, Daniel, who was seven years younger than him,
probably the golden boy. Yes.
Oh, yeah. He was athletic from a young age, had great aptitude in several sports from the jump. And of course, Robert Sr., he valued physicality and sports and all of those manly things.
Manly things you do in the 1950s.
Yes. So he considered his oldest son a failure.
Oof.
He had given up on his oldest son. He just kind of shunned him and put him aside.
I mean, it's his father's genetics that gave him those terrible eyes.
Like, the terrible
eyes. That's
your
fault, Robert.
The high blood pressure. All of it. Blame yourself.
We're blaming Robert Sr. Robert Sr., you fucked up your kid.
He sure did. Actually, he fucked up both of them because it was known that Robert Sr. would physically and emotionally abuse both of his kids. Not just Mr. Robert, but also little Daniel would get abused, and they would get beaten with a leather strap.
You know how domestic violence builds character in the 1950s? Come on now.
You know, they were all like, we got beat and we turned out fine.
Except, great. My dad would beat me unconscious, but I am a lawyer now. I'm not an alcoholic.
So by the time Robert reached puberty, he realized that he was gay.
Oh.
He just, you know, kind of came to the realization, I'm not into girls. I'm not into the typical things that other boys my age are into. So, you know,
there's nothing wrong
according to his father and according to the church and according to the times.
Yes.
It was something that he had to keep very secret, very close to him.
Which is sad.
Yeah, it is. And just like any like young person that's trying to deny themselves of who they are, he was trying to cope by like deflecting.
Was he trying to be like hyper masculine or like,
yeah, girl, you figured it. You figured
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Just
hyper masculine in the sense of.
Kat mm-hmm. is our resident girl. Psychologist.
Listen, I have no recollection of my psychology degree.
but he was hyper masculine. I think Robert knew his strengths and his weaknesses. I think Robert knew that he was not strong physically, but mentally,
like in the academic intellect, sense, if he really tried.
Right.
Yeah.
He knew that he was, or he felt like he was superior to people. So as he went through his teen years, Robert developed like this very overinflated self-confidence. And so that often meant he would be rude and condescending towards women specifically because, you know,
ew.
What other way is there to make yourself feel big than to make other people feel small, especially women.
That's really going to catch my eye. A degrading sense of my being. Sign me up.
Yeah, I mean, hey, it worked. Apparently, he had girlfriends.
Ew.
Like, as a teenager growing up, so.
Oh.
You know, probably just
poor
to
things.
Appease his father.
Yeah.
Which I wrote in my notes that I was getting very Gacy vibes from this whole father-son dynamic of, like, the son realizes he's gay, but the father's
is,
like
no!
very masculine and abusive. So,
yeah.
Very Gacy vibes.
Ah.
Also, in his teen years, Robert's father died of a heart attack. The family had gone to visit, or his parents had gone to visit some family, and I think Robert didn't go with them. And on their way back, like, his father had a heart attack there, and he didn't know about it until, like, they came back, and his father just wasn't there.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine? And because it was all that Robert knew, Robert sought out, like, religion to help him cope with the loss of his father.
The Catholic
and,
guilt.
Yeah. And so this actually led him to read extensively about different religions, about different faiths and practices. And pretty much at the end of, like, this religious sort of epiphany.
Like, not phase,
he was trying,
but... You know,
while he was trying to comfort himself with religion about the death of his father, he ended up just becoming, like, cynical of religion altogether.
Oh.
Like, especially after reading all of these different faiths and texts and just, like, how can one religion be right and the other one? And, you know, people kill themselves over religion all the time.
People have gone to war over religion. It's just,
Yeah. It made him not want anything to do with religion. Is that right? Did I say that right?
He didn't want anything to do with religion. Take a shot, because we don't know how to speak English.
I don't know how to speak English.
You know.
I mastered it. I got a 5 on my AP English exams.
Literally. I guess that's an A.
Literally.
Quite literally a. translates into an A.
A. So yeah. In that same year, he went and saw the film The Collector.
Oh.
So this is partly where one of his nicknames comes from. Because The Collector was a psychological horror film in which a young Englishman stalks a beautiful art student before abducting and holding her captive in the basement of his rural farmhouse. Rural farmhouse.
That sounds like a great romantic comedy.
Yeah, in the movie, the girl dies of an illness that she contracted in the basement.
Well, despite that's no fun.
Yeah, you know, despite her captor's efforts to keep her alive. So this was just like the little synopsis that I read.
Just looked up the Wikipedia, or like I just typed in, because I know there's a movie they released a few years ago called The Collector, but obviously, like,
yeah,
it's the same thing.
Yeah, this one was from 1967.
Is phenomenal. Clerk Freddie Clegg. That is an
love it
ugly name.
Love that name.
An avid butterfly collector wins a football pool and buys a country house with a large basement. He then kidnaps art student Miranda Gray, a longtime crush of his, after trailing her in a van. Freddy locks Miranda in the basement and buys her clothes and books so that she can get to know him. They initially agree that she will stay at the house for a month, but Miranda fears what will happen when the time comes for her to leave.
No. See,
I'm adding this movie to my list. Oh, wow. It was nominated Academy Award for Best Actress and Best Actor.
The one that came out a few years ago?
Or the 1965 one.
Okay.
And the tagline is, almost a love story.
Almost a love story. Yes, because...
Oh my gosh.
Love stories all start with fucking stalking someone.
Yes, and the director? He turned down The Sound of Music to make this movie.
This Mistakes is a were watch. Made.
This is going to be a classic film. I'm a huge fan of cheesy horror films because I get scared very easily and they're not scary. They're funny. So this sounds like a great comedy for the family.
Yes. Oh, yes. A very psychotic butterfly collector. Yeah, that's kind of crazy. But yeah, Robert said that this, you know, this film left a long lasting impression on him.
And I don't think it was butterflies.
No, it would eventually change his life and shape his murders. Wow. Because his whole MO.
Modus operandi.
His whole modus operandi was shaped around the concept of the collector.
I'm really disappointed that he did not pick up on the butterfly collecting. Yeah. Disappoints me. That would have been a great hobby for him.
Collect butterflies.
Not
art students. After high school after going through high school, finishing high school, obviously Robert was smart and talented, and he ended up getting into the Kansas City Art Institute, where he wanted to study to become a college professor. Nice. Because haven't we all been there with our liberal arts degree?
I say that I want to be a professor, but part of me is like, oh my God, do I want to be a professor or do I just want to keep going to school for the rest of my life? Because that's the only thing that I know I'm really excelling in. I wonder if that's what was happening with young Robert.
Probably. However, you know, good things never last.
True.
By his second year, he, you know, got really into anti-authoritarianism.
He's going through his college rebel phase.
Right, exactly. He was all, fuck the man. You know, college is a scam, which it is.
It is.
But, you know, so he was like, he stopped going to class. He was not really caring about his grades.
Fuck the establishment.
And he got involved with like a clique of students who were also minor drug dealers on the campus.
Oh.
So naturally, he too started dealing on campus.
Dibble dabble in the dealings.
He was the plug. Also at this same time, he began to abuse alcohol.
Oh.
And he started engaging in acts of animal torture.
I
put in my notes, I don't even want to go into the details of what I read because it was awful and this guy was sick.
Oh, no. I don't like that. Oh.
So all of this is building up. He's getting more angsty and more rebellious. So naturally, he has his first run-in with the law. He got caught trying to sell methamphetamines to an undercover cop when he was 19.
That'll spice up your day.
Yeah, you know, I feel like when I was first reading this and it was like, oh, minor drug dealer. I was like, he's just selling some weed.
He's just weed.
Methamphetamines, though?
That is not minor.
That is not minor.
That is what we call escalation.
At this, when he got arrested for this attempt to deal, he was able to make his bond payment. He was able to make bail, and he posted a $3,000 bond, which in today's dollars is about $22,000.
Huh.
Like, what 19-year-old just has that kind of money to bail himself out of jail? I guess it's selling all that meth.
The meth got him in jail. The meth got him out of jail. It's a balance.
Circle of life.
But don't do meth.
Don't do meth.
Don't
take a shot because we sang.
I will take a drink.
I'm out of my tea for the evening, so very sad.
I'm drinking the rest of... God, this tastes terrible.
Catherine's entire face just went red after taking a drink of that nasty Choco Loco beer thing she had.
I bought it, so I feel like I have to drink it. You know, because it was expensive.
Yeah, it's like that craftsy shit.
Yeah.
You gotta finish it. I mean,
the arts district.
Do it for the alcohol of it. It is what it is. Where was I?
Right. Meth got him out of jail.
Meth got him out of jail. And because this was like his first offense, the judge, and because he pled guilty, the judge gave him like a 5-year suspended sentence as part of a plea bargain. So yeah. I looked up to see what the suspended sentence was, and it's almost like a parole period. So it's like he was technically like on parole for those 5 years.
Yeah,
so
don't slip up.
5-year period, right, you can't slip up. Like, you can't get arrested again. Or then we'll actually go.
Or we'll send you to jail for the rest of however long your sentence is. Yeah.
And well, clearly our man's Robert did not give a fuck, because just a month later, he was arrested again.
I mean, he was selling methamphetamines. He's not going to give a fuck about anything. Yeah. And this torturing animals and being an alcoholic.
Yeah, he's balancing a lot on his plate. But this time he gets caught for possessing marijuana and LSD.
Oh, that's...
And this time he also got arrested with like two other students. And the charges were actually dropped due to a lack of evidence against him and one of the other students. But only one of the three was actually charged and sentenced.
They probably decided we're going to put the blame on this guy. That's what happened.
Right. So charges were dropped against him due to lack of evidence. Probably pinned it on the one guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Robert went back to school. But he was made to voluntarily withdraw, quote unquote.
Ooh.
Because the administration was pretty much forced him to withdraw after Robert killed and cooked a duck in front of his peers for, quote unquote, the sake of art.
What the?
One of the animal tortures is like he literally like as a, you know, performance art or
I'm going to do
fuck.
A dramatic piece of slaughtering an animal and call it art.
Administration was not happy, as you can imagine, and they were like, listen, you can go peacefully or you can go unpeacefully. So he was like, well, you know, I'm kind of not into
the
school shit anymore anyway, so he just up and left.
Bye.
He dropped out. However, he, like, stayed in Kansas City, like, in the Kansas City area. And at this point in his life, Robert had also come out as gay and had been openly gay for a few years, like, once he got to college.
Yeah.
So now that he wasn't in school, he started hanging around male prostitutes, drug addicts, petty criminals, and runaways. According to him, there was no physical contact with these men because he was only trying to help them.
Okay.
Trying to help them stray away from their criminal and damaging lifestyles by giving them a place to stay and loaning them money whenever they needed it. He was their savior.
He was their Jesus.
He was.
He denounced religion, but he became Jesus, helping the poor.
He helped the poor, the downtrodden, I don't know my Bible verses, I don't know how
I literally I didn't touch a Bible until I became friends with a girl, and you know, she was one of those, you're not allowed to read Harry Potter because it'll turn you into a Wiccan type families, but she was obsessed with the series, and it wasn't until I like went to church with her and like slept over and like her mom was eyeballing me because we had to say prayers before we went to sleep. And so I just kind of went with it out of respect. And then I look up and she's eyeballing me. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, like what else are you supposed to do? But, you know, like, listen, I'll respect you in your household, but respect me. Respect me and my beliefs,
too. And then they took me to church the next morning. And they said that if I didn't attend church, God was going to kill my family in a lightning storm. And they gave me homework. And this was the first experience I ever had with a religious institution, organization, any of that. And I was like freaking out. And I was like, oh my God, like, mommy, I have to go back to church to turn in my homework and this and this. She kept the homework out of sentiment.
The trauma.
Because no, of the trauma. Of course she did. But I mean.
We should find it. Dig it up. We need to find it.
Because at the top of the page was like a clip art of like a little kid scared in bed, and there's like a cloud and a lightning bolt.
I don't understand.
I wish I was making this up.
I don't understand. Like, that's just, it's fear mongering.
It is.
That's all.
And I was like, scary. I don't even know. That's literally frightening. I must have been in, like, third grade, I think. Third grade? So.
Yeah. Around the time of the death threat.
So, actually, to clarify last week, the death threat from young Peter that happened in kindergarten. We're talking younger than that. And...
So, you're telling me this kid watched Chicago in kindergarten?
The kicker? He was the son of a preacher.
Oh my. Full circle.
Oh, yes.
Full circle. Yes, I love that.
Yes. Just to clarify last week, because I was thinking about it, and I was like...
Literally fucking insane.
Wait a second. I didn't have to deal with Peter for 3 years. It was before that. And then it was like, oh, we were in kindergarten together. To clarify my fun story from last week about how my first death threat was
second death threat.
My second death threat, yes. Because the first death threat, fun tangent, was my friend Mitchell. And apparently...
Your friend?
Yeah. Air quote that.
Quote.
I have no memory of this, but apparently I am a married woman. Because I was officially married in a ceremony to young Mitchell on a playground. So I don't know where my husband is. I'm a wife. He probably left me. But,
scoundrel.
You know, I don't really know. You know what? And I don't really care. I'm doing my own thing. But Mitchell did not like that I was friends with other boys in the class.
You and harlot.
I was just trying my best.
You were too young to commit.
I was too young to commit. You know, I was a free spirit as a child. Free spirit in the fact that people were like, she's going to grow up to be the principal of the school. That was my childhood spirit.
Oh my.
But we were on top of the playground. And, you know, like, the top of the playground, there's the slide, and you can, like, on the top of the slide, it kind of overlooked the field, and you could, you know, it was just a nice view for a playground. Mm-hmm. And then we're sitting there, and Mitchell looks me dead in the eye and says, if you ever talk to him again, I will kill you. I'm totally
dead
fine.
Silence. Literally no words.
It's fine.
I hate to know how he grew up to be, but, and how his girlfriends came to.
And fun fact, one last fun fact. So the school notified my mom on the first one with Mitchell, but after Peter threatened to slit my throat, the school didn't call her. She found out because when she came to pick me up, I was like, oh yeah, Peter said this to me today. And she called the school and was like, what the fuck?
I'm so shook. I can't.
I've never told Julie that. Yeah. Because it's something I just kind of forgot about. And it wasn't until I was like, oh yeah, we're doing the episode on Chicago. And, like, I visibly remember it happening. So, yeah, that's my fun clarification on updates on my fun little story last week.
Cool.
So cool, right? I'm totally fine. Oh, yeah.
You're totally fine.
I'm totally fine.
You didn't grow up to be fucking the butcher of Kansas City.
Exactly. So. I got bullied, but I didn't kill anyone. I just buried it deep down and then cried when I got home.
That's
like
how
any other American kid.
Like, that's right. That's right. So where were we?
I don't even know.
Yeah, so. Yeah, we're like on all type of tangents today.
We really are.
Where the fuck am I? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was out and about living his gay life, and then he was acting like Jesus to the addicts.
He was taking these people in, these at-risk youths. These at-risk youths, he was taking them in, saying that, you know, no sexual relations, no physical contact. He was just doing it out of the goodness of his heart to help.
Out of the goodness of his good former Catholic heart.
But later, investigators would learn that Robert would, in fact, engage in sexual relations with these men frequently.
Oof.
And that he actually like held a power over them.
Oh.
Because he would use the help that he was giving them as leverage against them to coerce them into having sex with him.
Oof.
So he was like, you remember that one time I let you crash on my couch? So you gotta do what I want. So he was a fucking asshole. He was not doing shit out of the goodness of his heart. I don't think he had goodness in his heart, honestly.
No.
Besides that, though, like, people in his neighborhood knew that he helped these at-risk youths, and they saw Berdella as an upstanding member of the community.
Oh.
They said he was flamboyant, but very civic-minded. Like served in the neighborhood watch. He worked at restaurants around Kansas City as a short order cook and eventually moved up to senior chef at like several restaurants around Kansas City.
My God, that's a lot of work.
Yeah. He helped develop a training program for aspiring chefs at a local community college. And eventually he opened his own shop at the Westport Flea Market, and he called it Bob's Bazaar, like a bazaar, like an open-air market, bazaar, as in strange. So Bob's Bazaar.
This would make, like, I'm just imagining this now as Bob's Burgers, and the Bazaar is on the harbor.
Literally,
but
but
did he get the nickname the Butcher because he was involved in the culinary arts?
No, he got the name Butcher because would. Yeah,
but like,
I mean, like
he was involved in the culinary arts, and then he just happened to kill people.
No,
the title
he got the name the Butcher because he dismembered all of his victims into
like any
multiple
good chef.
Pieces. Yeah, into multiple pieces. So. Ooh. But yeah, Bob's Bazaar, he sold like indigenous art and jewelry and antiques because fun, like random fact, when he was younger, he would have all of these pen pals from the Pacific Rim and, you know, like Asia and India and like various countries in Africa.
Part of his pen pals, like a part of him exploring different religions and like
I think
people?
It was more so like the culture part of it, because remember he didn't get into like the crazy religion reading until his like father passed away, which was later
that's
in his
right
teens.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah, So I'm only tipsy. This was like when he was a little bit younger than that. And so he like his pen pals had like sent him like
all of these and things, kind of stuff. Yeah.
And he started selling them. So one of the crazy things that I found in my research for this is that in 2016, a Facebook business profile like was created for Bob's Bazaar Bazaar, claiming that the shop would reopen and that was now being run by Bob's brother. And so like
the successful younger brother?
Yeah. So they created a post that I have here. And I'll send you the picture after this so you can post this to our Instagram. But it says, "We're really excited to announce that after nearly 30 years after being closed, BBB's is reopening in its original location at Westport Flea Market Bar and Grill. Despite the horrible things that our uncle slash brother did, we have
just to clear the air."
I know. Just like one tiny little Facebook post. Just the terrible way, things.
Just ignore.
"We have decided to not let it affect our family business any longer. We hope to embrace the city that we love so dearly once again. See you at the grand opening on October 29th. So wow. This was clearly a hoax. Like, it was not true. Bob's Bazaar Bazaar had not reopened. When he first opened his business, he was like doing part-time, being a part-time chef and part-time running his business. But he definitely wanted to grow his business more and focus more on it. So he gave up cooking and decided to just focus on selling these antiques. However, he was like not making enough money for his day-to-day expenses. Ooh. It was just like very touch and go. Like one month he would do really well or sell something really big.
It's not stable. Yeah.
Right. It wasn't stable. So he started like stealing artifacts. Ooh. And like stealing antiques to sell and scam people. Yeah. So he was like pretty down and out about his business. But he eventually became friends with the man who owned the booth next to his. This man's name was Paul Howell. And so they became friends. And soon after that, Berdella also became friends with Paul's teenage son, Jerry Howell. Mind you, Berdella is 33 years old at this point. And so this was 1982. So he had to be around 17.
Oh, no.
So in the things that I was reading, it was saying that initially Paul and Jerry would like make fun of Robert for being gay. Is like fucked.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, that not the kind of friends you want to have. No. Honestly. But over the next couple years, the friendship with the family grew, and Jerry, the son, eventually confided in Robert that he sometimes made money as a male prostitute whenever he needed like extra cash. And so
that's profitable.
Absolutely.
I just watched a TV show, Fatal Attractions, and a guy became a stripper to make money to buy a hyena.
I would do it. I think that's a foolproof plan.
And he would say, yeah, I would just close my eyes and start dancing, and all I would see was my hyena. It's like, oh. Anyway.
What a motivation. I love it.
Yeah.
So yeah, obviously after this confession, it like brought the two of them closer. And once again, Robert would help young Jerry. Anytime he had legal or financial troubles or was, you know, in any sort of like a bind, Robert would always come to the rescue and help Jerry out. Now, by the summer of 1984, Jerry had just turned 19 and he wanted to participate in a dance contest in this town called Merriam, which was about 20 minutes outside of Kansas City, Missouri. So, of course, he asks his friend Robert to give him a ride.
Oh, no.
And Robert agrees.
The boy just wanted to go dancing.
He just wanted to go dancing.
He just wanted to have a fun night.
But he never made it.
He's not going to have a fun night, is he?
No. No, he's not.
No.
So Robert goes to pick Jerry up. And in the car, Robert gives Jerry a cocktail of alcohol, Valium, and acepromazine. He gave him so much until he became unconscious.
Oh, God.
And he took him to his home.
Oh.
So once at Robert's house, Robert injected Jerry with a heavy tranquilizer and tied him to his bed.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
Yeah. So over the next 28 hours, Robert drugged, tortured, and raped Jerry with multiple objects.
Oh, no.
And according to Robert, Jerry was like, he kept asking Robert why he was doing this to him because he thought they were friends.
That is fucked.
Yeah. And eventually, Robert says that Jerry either asphyxiated on his own vomit or the combination of the gag and the medicines were too strong for him to be able to catch breath.
Oh my God.
And Jerry died.
Oh.
After that, Berdella dragged his body to the basement of his home and suspended Jerry's body above a cooking pot. He made He didn't eat him. He didn't eat him.
Oh, so that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. He didn't eat the body. Which when I first read cooking pot, I was like,
like we're talking like
going?
A cauldron?
Like
I guess like
I don't
a
know.
Cauldron in his basement?
I guess so. So yeah, he made like multiple incisions in Jerry's inner elbows and in his jugular vein and left him hanging overnight so that his entire blood his entire body would be drained of blood.
I guess he just suspended him upside down
over
this
pot
so then all the
like this is his first kill and he's already being so elaborate. It's kind of insane. So the next day, he comes back. Jerry's body don't have a single drop left of blood. So Robert dismembers his body and placed each section, each different section, like, wrapped in newspaper and put them in garbage bags. And he just put these garbage bags in his trash can for the regular garbage collection to take up.
Everyday garbage. Who's gonna know?
Who's gonna know?
They're not gonna know.
How would they know?
They're not going to know.
They're not going to know. And a few days later, when investigators went to Robert to question him about Jerry's disappearance, Robert claimed that he dropped Jerry off at a place that was close to the location of the dance competition, just like he had promised, and that the two then parted ways, and he hasn't seen him since.
Oh.
It was later found that Robert actually kept a detailed journal.
Oh.
Where
he
documented.
Had a diary.
Yeah. He documented each sexual and torturous act that he inflicted on Jerry.
Jesus.
And that would be something that he would do for all of his victims. And Kat, I'm not even talking about just like one little page.
Today I killed a man. No.
We're talking files upon files.
Jesus Christ.
Of logs and descriptions of
like
what
he's running an experiment.
Yeah. So oh I'll send God. You the picture, but I found a photo a crime scene photo of I think it was his kitchen, and you see that it is just full of boxes containing papers, and that was all of the documents that he had kept documenting his murders.
Oh my God.
So it is like so jarring to see. But yeah, I'm going to be stopping here for part one, because I feel like you really got a good sense of
the craziness.
Yeah, who Robert is, what made him this way, and how it all led to him killing his first victim, which was fucking gruesome. So,
and he was friends with the guy's dad.
He was friends with the guy's dad.
He was friends with his father.
Yeah. His father trusted him.
Oh my God.
This guy was a fucking monster. And like I was saying earlier, each of the murders get increasingly gruesome.
I mean, this guy probably wrote like a fucking book for each kill.
Yeah, probably. And so I feel like we needed a bit of a buffer before I got into some of the more gruesome stuff, because some of his victims, he kept locked up for up to 6 weeks.
Oh my God.
So Jerry was only kept for 28 hours. Like,
oh my God.
So I wanted to give a bit of a buffer before piling all of that stuff on.
Mental unlike the preparation.
Sylvia, yeah. Unlike the Sylvia Likens episode where I felt like I dumped all of the torture on you in one go, and I feel like it was a lot. So this one, I want to space out a little bit, because, like I said, there are 5 more murders and a kind of crazy capture story. Oof. So we'll leave that for next time.
For next time, friends.
Yeah. What do we think about our main character so far?
Oh my God. Fuck our main character.
Yeah, fuck
Jesus.
Him.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I feel like I've heard of this guy, but again, I think I'm just confusing that with, because I think that family did own a general store in Kansas, which is why I have them paired in my mind like that. But I mean, that is just so fucked. Like, he's friends with this guy's dad, and he's probably watching his dad lose his mind because he doesn't know where his son is. His son has completely disappeared, and he's just sitting there and probably being the good, friendly neighbor that he is, consoling him.
I feel like this case is so, and it's funny because it actually reminds me of the TikTok you just sent me.
Oh my gosh.
About the two true crime girls doing a podcast, which,
yes,
like,
I wish we could share that on Instagram, but it wouldn't let me.
But in the TikTok, it's like the two girls talking, and she's like, yeah, he, you know, boiled up his entire family and ate them. And the other girl's like, ugh, no originality anymore. Nobody's original anymore.
No one's original.
So I'm like,
been there, done
this
that.
This sounds like Gacy. It was also like a fucking Dahmer type of, like, Dahmer.
There was a lot going on.
Yeah, so
there was a lot.
I feel like these guys, you know, not to say that they don't experience tough stuff in childhood, but it's such an interesting case of nature versus nurture, because like whatever you lived through does not automatically mean that that's going to cause you to do this.
Exactly. I had someone tell me they were going to slit my throat in my sleep. I haven't harmed anyone
she
physically.
Hasn't harmed anyone.
No.
So take note. Do not harm people. Just create
a
true crime podcast and talk about it instead.
Exactly. Like, I was very obsessed with the movie Orphan when it came out.
Me
I
too.
Loved that movie. Like, and people thought it was shout out to Dallas, because she was like, God, this girl's got super long hair and she keeps talking about the movie Orphan. But here we are, all these years later.
Yes. The way Dallas lovingly bullied Catherine in high school was my favorite dynamic.
It built character.
It built
this
character.
This was like fun dynamics, not like I'm going to murder you.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. This was much
completely different.
This was more like stop wearing raccoon eyeliner, Catherine.
Yes.
It's like for your own.
I had to learn that eyeliner thickly drawn all the way around my eyes
in black,
like a little trash panda in black. with the copper eyeshadow going all the way up to my eyebrow was not a look. Oof.
It was not a look.
It was not a look.
And now the photo is hanging up on your fridge and we don't let you live it down every time we come over. Yes. So we will never let you forget.
Yes, maybe I'll post it one day on our Instagram for a throwback. I think, yes, the raccoon eyes of a young cat.
Yes, it was iconic, honestly.
It was. I rocked it.
But, I mean, at least you had black eyeliner. I would try to wear, like, the sparkly light blue or, like, light purple eyeliner.
See, that could be kind of fun, though, because, like, purple works with brown eyes.
I mean, for show, but the way that I was using it, no. It did not work. It was not cute.
We've all been
but
there.
But I had like all those jelly bracelets too.
Oh, the jelly, the silly bands?
Yes. Oh. No, not the silly bands. Not the ones that were in shape of animals, which the young kids, you didn't grow up with silly bands. What the fuck are you doing? We literally, like we all went
manic. We were
manic.
Trading that shit.
We went manic over these little rubber bracelets that were in the shape of different animals, and we would just like be trading them like drugs. Like, I'll give you,
it was like a
I'll
whole
give you two
operation.
Of my hippopotamus for one of your giraffes.
I feel like that's how we've learned to navigate the American market.
Oh, it was through good, silly such bands. A good lesson. It was not the school system, clearly.
It wasn't. We did it ourselves. That was our own exchange ourselves. City.
Oh my god, that was so...
That was a fucking classic. I don't know if any other cities did this for kids, but here in Charlotte, that was just a Charlotte thing?
Yeah, because I told Andy about it, and he literally looked shocked that we did anything like that.
Yeah, so basically, it was this building, and you kind of like went into the basement, and it was like its own city. Like, you had the grocery store, you had... Because I worked in the reporter's office, the post office,
the
bank.
The hospital.
Yes.
It even had like a radio station. There was like the town hall, the mayor. So you would take an aptitude test, pretty much like a career aptitude test, and it would tell you what your role was in the city. Kat was in the reporter's office.
I was in the reporter.
I was a physician, so I worked in the hospital. And so each, like, you would get like fake money and you try to run your
little
city. Yeah,
like they gave you a checkbook.
A checkbook, that's what it was. And you were supposed to pay for goods and services and then also make money from, and like you learned how to balance a checkbook and all that kind of shit. It was like the only useful thing we ever learned.
Yeah. And I got to write this really intense story. So like in the city, so it's basically just like squares on the floor, mm-hmm. but there were squares with flowers on them, and
love that.
You were not allowed to stand on the squares with the flowers.
It was
and
the basement
so
of property.
It was. It was an embarrassment. You know why? Because we caught someone who worked for the police station.
No!
Standing in the flower squares.
The fucking pigs. Standing and ruining our flowers, our oxygen.
Yes. And the controversy, words.
Take a shot.
Take a shot. Was that it was, what was his name? Mason. I remember I had a really big crush on him. But it was, Mason worked in for the reporting, and it was his brother that was a part of the police station. It was our own scandal.
He wrote the tell-all about his own brother.
I was Olivia Pope in that moment.
Amazing. I love that. That
but I didn't know how to balance a checkbook.
But listen, that sounds like way more fun than what we got to do at the physician's office, like in the hospital. Because, you know, obviously, we weren't real doctors. So we couldn't treat anything.
Children.
So whenever patients came, right, quote unquote, patients came to see us, like, oh, you had a sprained ankle.
Here's a charge of $3,500.
All we had to do was they gave us like these little towels, like little washcloths almost. And then the activity that we had to do was fold them into little towel bunnies. Like, you know how when you go
towel
to like
buddy's
on a
cure yeah, all your problems.
Like, you know, if you go to like on a cruise or at a hotel, they have like a little towel art, like a yeah. towel swan or whatever. No, well, we learned how to make fucking towel bunnies. And when somebody would come to us with a sprained ankle, we would just be like, here is our towel bunny.
You are cured.
You are cured. So yours sounds way more fun.
It was a lot.
I feel like that is way too much power to give to a child.
Yes. We were bloodthirsty reporters.
Yeah, but I mean, hey, at least Charlotte Mecklenburg did one thing right, and that was Exchange City.
That was the only
thing. Because clearly
good
they
thing.
Did not teach us how to spell.
No.
Or
speak.
How to pronounce words. Or how to do math.
No.
So.
But if you stand in a tile with flowers on it, I will get your ass.
Cat will get you.
I
yes.
will get
yes.
you.
Yes. I love that. But yeah, that was part one of Robert Berdella, the Butcher of Kansas City / The Collector.
Bum, bum, bum.
And if you've made it all the way to this point.
After all our fun ramblings.
After our stories took 10 different directions, because this is just who we are as people.
It's who we are, and we love it.
Love it. And you're here, so you've got to love it.
You
right?
got to enjoy it. You know, and thank you for enjoying it.
Yes. But yeah, if you've made it this far, you have earned our ABCs of crime.
Woo!
And yes, our ABCs of crime for today is the letter C. For collect butterflies, not bodies.
Yes.
So don't be like.
Don't be the butcher.
Don't be like the butcher, the collector. No. Don't be like him.
Collect stamps. Don't. Collect butterflies.
Not art students.
Not art students or bodies. No.
Yeah. That's not nice.
No.
Yeah. Thank you guys for all of the support. All of the love.
All
Thank you for
love.
Hanging in with our manic energy every once in a while.
It just happens.
Yeah, send us some fun DMs. Tell us you love us. Make us feel good inside.
Please, make us feel
and
validated.
Yes.
I'm constantly seeking validation.
That's the entire reason why we started this podcast. So
yes.
Yeah, give us what we came for, and we will give you some fun true crime stories.
Exactly. It's a give and take. Yes.
Exactly.
Or a give and give, really. You give us love, we give you stories.
That's right. Everybody
It's a give.
But, yeah. All
yeah.
that's left to do now is say
good night,
friends.
Pals.
Amigos.